Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Welcome, guys, to episode 82 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and Johnny Stofko is with me.
What's up, guys? Episode 82. It's a great year and a great number. I was born 1982, as was TK, and today we have a special guest. I know we've been attempting and putting ourselves in a position to build up to be able to get a hold of this guy. So share with our fans and audience who we're interviewing today.
Yeah, we've got Lewis House, a fellow Ohio boy, guy, a visionary, one of the greatest podcasters in the world. This guy has interviewed them all from his, you know, scintillating interview this week with NFL legend Ray Lewis to guys like Tony Robbins, Gary V, like we have as well. He's done Arianna Huffington, Maria Sharapova. The list is endless, and he brings this really creative perspective. If you followed him for a long, long time, like I'm sure plenty of our audience has, you'll see the growth that the man has done over the last 4 years. And apart from maybe Joe Rogan, I think he's the next best in the business.
Yeah, two very different styles. That's a beautiful part about this space that we all collectively share, the podcasting realm, is that it's very new. And also there aren't any regulations or rules. It's not like a night show or like a format of a specific structure. So with Lewis, I think one of Lewis's greatest attributes is his professionalism, his intent with what he wants to achieve with each interview. It's very clear when you listen to his show, The School of Greatness. And one specific interview that he did that really resonated with me was the Tony Robbins one that he did in his – Do you remember this? I think he did it in his jet.
He did it in
his
jet, yeah.
And, man, we were, I think, 12 weeks into this journey. So I think it was maybe last February.
It was very early in the year.
Or March. Yeah. And when I saw that, it was like, man, I want to get there.
Yeah.
And the path isn't, man, the path hasn't been always been smooth. But you go through these ups and downs. And to see where we are now at episode 82 and now are able to share the space with Lewis and ask advice from him, because that's why we're here. Essentially, what are we doing, Tristan? We're asking for help.
Oh, definitely. You want to learn from the people that you aspire to be, and I think that's what today's like. And I think for the Australian audience that haven't heard from Lewis, I think it's an opportunity, because it's not just about listening to the Vision Board Podcast. If they can listen to other shows that also can help them grow, I think that's essentially what we want to do. And that's why we bring other podcasters on. Now, the last few episodes, you know, after Rich Roll, Sean Stevenson, they've got their own podcast too, and we do want to actually promote them, because we listen to them on a weekly basis, and that's what's helped us grow, and I think that's what will help them grow.
It reminds me of the saying that you could be the smartest man in the world, but if you don't share your knowledge, you might as well be a moot, or a moot point. And
well, the world becomes a better place, right?
If you're sharing. So the idea here is, you hit it right on the nose, is you know the value that a Lewis has done for you. Without ever speaking to him yet, listening to his show, ideas, creativity, how to treat people, where to go with business, where to go with our relationship, things like that.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody out there listening now that only listens to the Vision Board who doesn't know the School of Greatness, now what we could do is open up a different framework mentally for them. Oh, I never thought of, they could listen to the episode with Ray Lewis that House had on. And when they're talking about adversity and advice to somebody out there who feels that the walls are caving in.
Yep.
You know, well, one little technique there.
For me, I think it complements the Vision Board Podcast, because it's such a different show, but at the same time, I think it's based on the same sort of values and beliefs. So I think people will get a lot out of it by continuing to listen to us, continuing to listen to Lewis. And then also, you know, then you have your different sort of genres. Like, for example, like for me, educational-wise, I like to listen to Joe DeFranco. For something funny, I like to listen to Fighter and the Kid. For something that's kind of a mix of both and something that I inspire to be, I like listening to Lewis.
Yeah, see, that's an interesting point, a valid point. I feel that I fill all of those gaps. Everybody's wired differently. What works for me is Rogan.
Yeah.
Like, Rogan has this platform that, you know, he's the podfather, man. He's the guy that has been laying he's over 800 episodes. He's been in the game since 2006. The thing that we have on Rogan, though, is that Joe is going to be 50. He didn't start podcasting until he was 43. We started at 34.
There you go. We've got age on our side.
Yeah, we got guys, you know, thanks to guys like Joe, thanks to guys like Lewis, Tim Ferriss, we get to learn from these guys, and now we get to use them applicably in our craft. Because what's the number one question lately? Tristan, how do you make money off the show?
True.
Johnny, are you getting paid to do it? And it's like, instantly. If those are the questions from whoever's delivering them to us, that instantly allows us to know how that person thinks.
Yeah.
Because you don't do something like this. You don't ask for help to get paid.
Yeah.
You ask for help to grow, to learn, to develop your skill set. And Lewis to show the School of Greatness, ours, I feel the important part about it, the important space which we do, is it allows for people to sit, no judgment, listen, learn, and then hopefully take away some tools to use in their everyday life.
Definitely. Guys, just before we get Lewis on deck, just a big thank you, big shout out to all you guys for leaving us messages of support, leaving us those 5-star reviews on iTunes, which is really, really grateful for on our side. It just helps us grow and just appear in different charts, and organic growth is huge for us. So thank you. So for the people that haven't, if you could just share that with your friends, subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, it's very much appreciated.
Also, on another level, like on more of an intrinsic level for myself, when I get messages in my Instagram or on my Twitter or Facebook, it means the world, because sometimes it's hard for us to compartmentalize us. You know, we're hustling, we're grinding, we're creating, we're interviewing, we're learning, but sometimes it's tough for me to take a step out of that spectrum and look at somebody actually listening to the show and then seeing if I'm actually providing value. So that's, for me, that's the biggest thing. So everyone listening right now who is following me, and if you're not, I appreciate the support. You could contact me at Johnny Stofko on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And then the Vision Board Podcast on Facebook, our website. We always blast if you're new to the show, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. Tristan Cannell, Instagram, Tristan Cannell, Facebook. And from there, get involved, and we love the interaction. It's almost like it adds more momentum to this chaos that we're causing, but in a good way.
Yeah, 100%, guys. So check that out. Get in touch with us. Also, we've got that deal on it for you. So you've got 10% off if you use the code word Vision Board. For myself, I'm using the Buffalo Bars. It's great. It's handy. I ate one when we were in the car this morning after Lewis House.
I was jealous, and I didn't ask for a bite. I'm growing, because you never ask your boy for food.
Yeah, the jalapenos in there. They're beautiful.
Yeah, man. And On It, dude, their brand, if you're unfamiliar with On It, based out of Austin, Texas, Aubrey Marcus and Joe Rogan's company, they pride themselves on being a human optimization brand. So not only supplements that they have workout gear. They do workshops. So if you're living in that Austin area, check them out. They're always doing upscaling on kettlebell stuff, MMA stuff, jiu-jitsu things. They just had a tournament. I think the Eddie Bravo, there was a tournament in no-gi at the On It Training Academy there. But when you're proceeding to the checkout, like Tristan said, use keyword Vision Board, 10% off of that. You can check out their site from ours. Just go to ours at visionboard.com/onit. You'll be able to see everything that they have to offer.
Yeah, we've got big news on Christmas Eve. We'll be hosting CEO and founder of On It, Aubrey Marcus. So if you've got questions for Aubrey, we've also got Tim Kennedy, who's an On It athlete as well. So it's a bit of a sort of On It day. So if you've got any questions.
We did those guys the same day.
Same day, back to back. So Aubrey, Tim, if you want to get some questions in for the boys, same thing, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. We'd love to hear what sort of, because I know some of the Aussies probably haven't heard of On It that much. It's a growing brand, especially into our country. So check them out on their website. And, you can ask a question directly to the guy that actually created everything. So
Tim Kennedy is Special Forces, Army Ranger. Other than that, he's also a UFC fighter. He's also in a huge fight coming up in the
Gastelum,
next
this Saturday.
It's actually this Saturday against Gastelum. And he is also part of the UFC Fighters First Union, so Mixed Martial Arts Athletes Association, and it's guys like Tim Kennedy, George St. Pierre, Donald Cowboy Cerrone, and for the first, amongst other names, these are the big ones, TJ Dillashaw, and they're actually formed together, finally, a union that will defend the fighters' rights during their career and after their career. It's really a great cause. For instance, just to shed some light on that, the Major League Baseball Union is the best union in the world in terms of players and their rights. For instance, the player makes 50% of what the league makes, each player, in terms of their contract. Mm. The UFC fighter before this union made 7%.
Yeah.
7%. It's atrocious. It's grotesque to see what these guys put themselves through.
Yeah.
It's
going to be determined by whether the top line fighters really support it, but isn't it? In terms of your top line, your top 10, your Connors, and if they don't support
the union,
the union won't go through, will it?
Oh, no, the union's gone through it. They already have over 200 big profile names. It's not about, that's not the biggest thing.
But why do they need the top 10 to actually, they all go on strike?
You have, no, it's not.
Do you know what I mean?
It's not, I think the biggest issue here, and Tim will be able to shed some light, is the fact that will so far in the UFC, and these are former champions. You have Cain Velasquez, George St. Pierre, legend. Yeah. Tim Kennedy, legend. You have TJ Dillashaw, former champion. Donald Cowboy Cerrone fighting Matt Brown, perennial champion at 170 and 155. I think the issue here is, will the fighters be afraid to draw that line in the sand between Dana White and the union?
Yeah.
Because Dana has ruled...
It's going to be a big cross, isn't it?
Yeah, it may be a risk. And Dana has ruled by this iron fist for so long, my word goes. So I could see how that could be an issue. Mm. But when you have guys leading the charge like Tim Kennedy and George St. Pierre, you kind of would feel protected.
When GSP's in there, you probably... very close to pushing online. If they can get one more superstar to actually back him, I think that's all they need.
Oh, yeah. It's over 200 names already. Yeah. I don't think
I think the biggest problem, buddy, is like when you think about the top five, who do you reckon the top five highest paid people? You got Ronda, Connor,
John Jones. Maybe Cerrone. And
who's the middleweight champ? Cormier?
Bisping. Is the middleweight champ at 185. The 205 is Cormier. But the champs don't always equate to contracts.
But what I because mean by you have that like is, like, for them to say, for example, Conor McGregor makes more than the entire company puts together.
Yeah, because he demands it.
Yeah.
And he deserves it.
So but even though stepping the line.
No, Conor isn't making what he should be, though. That's the thing. At the press conference of the Mixed Martial Arts Athletic Association, Conor is only making the same 7%.
Mm.
Like, he needs to be making more. The thing is, there isn't anything set in stone. They didn't expect the UFC to grow like this. Yeah, it's the fastest growing sport, mixed martial arts. UFC is the organization. Guys listening at home who might not be familiar. So like, it's not when people say, "Oh, do you UFC?" No, the UFC is an organization. Do you do MMA? MMA is a sport, and in the world right now, mixed martial arts is the fastest growing sport. So as it evolves, things like this will evolve as well. It's definitely a good cause.
I guess. The UFC got those iron tight contracts as well. You know, we all know that they've got the best lawyers in the world, and those contracts are freaking iron tight. So it'd be interesting just to see where that actually goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stoked to get him on.
Yeah, but yeah, the better I can, the more they look after their fighters, the better, because there definitely is guys only making $3,000 per fight. When you think about it, it's awful. Most of them are making minimum wage to fight three times a year.
It's that Reebok deal, man. Before the Reebok deal, you were allowed to walk in with your sponsors. You were allowed to wear them on your shorts, and that's where you're getting your money. Now, because everybody's wearing the Reebok gear, you're paid on how many fights you've had in your career. So you have a guy about 3 months ago named Yair Rodriguez, probably the number one up-and-coming prospect in his division, is fighting a guy like Alex Caceres a few months back. And they were headlining. They were main eventing. And Yair Rodriguez, it was his fourth fight, made $2,500.
Mm.
Are you effing kidding me?
That's bad.
Now, I'm sure he got money behind closed doors. I would assume so.
I hope so.
There's parts of that contract probably that aren't released to the media. Well, but on paper.
Sponsors, you just can't put them on their shorts, right?
You can't put them on your shorts. You can't bring your banner out anymore. Mm. You used to be able to. You can't wear them on. Like, for instance, you can't have the belt. You can't have them on.
And unfortunately, that's when people are going to be watching you the most, isn't it?
Yeah, during the walk-in and then the post-fight interview. Yeah. You're not even allowed to wear, like, you know, your gear for the post-fight. You'll get fined for it. It's crazy.
Well, hopefully they get this sorted soon. Before we get on, guys, just remember to pick up your free ebook, our free abs guide, especially for your summer or you're competing in sports. Me and Johnny use this every week. Free sample meal plan in there as well. So check it out, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/ebooks, or it's also on the homepage. Just simply put your name and email and we'll send that straight to you.
Other than that, guys, episode 82.
I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, here's Lewis House.
Our special guest is Lewis House. Lewis is an inspiring lifestyle entrepreneur, business coach, and keynote speaker. He hosts one of the top podcasts named The School of Greatness, where he's interviewed the likes of Tony Robbins, Arianna Huffington, Maria Sharapova, and recently Ray Lewis. He's also a New York Times bestselling author and has been featured in the likes of People, Forbes, Men's Health, and The Today Show. We welcome Lewis House. Lewis, my man, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Lewis, once again, welcome to our show, The Vision Board Podcast. One of our, you know, slogans on our show is stories of success from around the world. Yours, The School of Greatness. I wanted to ask you from a personal perspective, How would you define greatness in one sentence if somebody asked you, Lewis, what is greatness? What would you say?
So my definition of greatness, I think it evolves over time. And if you would have asked me when I was, you know, playing football in high school, it would have been just to have a hot girlfriend and get a college scholarship was probably my definition then. And I think it evolves over time as we grow as human beings, as we become more aware, as we become clearer on our purpose and our vision. And so for me right now, the definition is discovering and cultivating the unique gifts and talents we're all born with to make a full-time living doing the thing we love the most while making the maximum impact on the people around us.
That's excellent. Lewis, did you ever spend time, you know, before your show, maybe in college, actually sitting down and going over your strengths and identifying them? Because I feel, you know, sometimes, you know, in my early 20s, mid-20s, when I kind of was floating around a little bit, I think the intent was lacking. Was this something that you had help with, or you knew from a young age, you knew what you had in you?
It's funny you guys asked this, because yesterday my mom shipped like 10 boxes, bins of all my childhood like awards and accomplishments from high school and college and notebooks. And so I've had them for about 6 months in my place, just putting it off, looking at it. And yesterday, finally, I had a two-hour window. Actually, Kerry Walsh, the Olympic beach volleyball champion, was supposed to do an interview the other day in my studio, and then we had to reschedule it. So I had a two-hour window, and I was like, let's tackle some of these boxes. As I started opening the boxes and going back 15, 20 years in my life, I was reading these old notebooks that I had with all these quotes from Tony Robbins and wow. Jim Rohn and like all these people back in the day. I had this thing called a leader's compass where I was like, who am I? What are my beliefs? What do I believe in? Like all these things I was writing about leadership and mindset and kind of personal development. Before I actually knew about this space, really, before I knew this was even a thing, I was just starving for direction. I was starving for discipline. I was starving for a structure to support me in achieving my athletic goals at the time and to becoming a better human, you know, to have better friends, to be more influential back in high school, college, playing professional football, et cetera, et cetera. And so my mind, I was constantly thinking about these things back in the day. I just didn't have kind of the purpose and the mission beyond sports on what I was going to do in this lifetime. So I think I was just always been kind of a seeker to strive for like better answers. And I guess that's probably why I do the podcast now, because I'm always looking to look for the answers.
Yeah. Is that something you still do now with writing down goals and visions and all that sort of things, Lewis?
Yeah, I'm constantly – I don't do as much writing in notebooks. I always want to, but then, you know, with technology now, I just have my phone and I just kind of do it there on my computer. But I it's hard for me to stop thinking about what I want to create. I'm constantly coming up with ideas that I want to bring to life. I love the entire process, the journey of having an idea to make something better, whether it was someone else or myself or any part of my life, to improve it through a physical product, a digital product, a coaching, an event, whatever it may be, a book. And so I'm always thinking about how I can improve certain things, and I'm always seeking for that information, I'm always seeking to learn new skills, a different mindset, whatever it is that can get me from where I am to where I want to be.
Lewis, something Tristan and I do, this is actually just the other day been our year anniversary of our show. So this first year has been full of ups, downs, expectations, an amazing learning opportunity. And a lot of times we'll go back and look at past episodes and then use them to compare where we need to go. If you could, you know, get in a time machine real quick and take yourself back to your first episode. And for anybody listening at home, so the podcast scene right now in Australia, it's not what it is in America right now. It's just now catching on. So
yeah,
we have a lot of guys who come up to us in the gym who want to start one, and they always ask us for advice. What advice would you give them if there's somebody out there who wants to start one? And then also, piggybacking off that, maybe like the most important lesson you learned in that first year that helped you keep going.
Don't start anything unless you're going to be different and unique than everyone else. If you're just doing the same thing like everyone else, if you're just doing a similar type of interview show like everyone else, if you're interviewing the same people in the same way, then you might as well not do it at all. You know, when blogging was, back in like 2007 through 2010, I remember like all these big blogs were kind of taking off and people were making a lot of money and getting all this traffic. And everyone was like, oh, I'm too late. I'm too late to get in. You're too late to get in if you're going to do the same thing and you have zero expertise and you add zero value to the world. But there are so many people, even over the last couple of years, who started blogs that have blown up fast because they do something unique. They have a different system. They have a different process. They have a unique voice. But if you try to just say, I'm going to copy the same thing that everyone else is doing and not be unique, then you're wasting your time. You'll get burnt out in 6 months. So you really got to find an angle or an approach or something that is going to be captivating enough that people want to listen to. And also you got to figure out what your vision is, because if you're in it to get millions of downloads a month or something, you know, and you have zero audience right now, then you're not thinking logically enough. And if you don't have a unique skill or a unique distribution or something, it's going to be hard to do that right really quick. I've been doing this. I'm almost at my four-year anniversary. Mm. You guys have probably seen my journey. I'm doing this three times a week. We have over 415 episodes. I've got mega celebrities, influencers, mainstream. I get people that no one else gets on podcasts. I get great distribution. I've got a great audience. And I'm only getting 1.4 million downloads a month. And that may seem like a lot to you guys or to other people listening, but in 4 years of hard, consistent, and smart work,
yeah,
and that's what the results I'm getting. So if you think you're going to jump to that right away, you better have some huge connection that's guaranteeing you to get those results. And you better not be in it for the money, because for me, I went into it not for the money. I was like, the first year, I'm not going to take any sponsorships. I'm not going to sell anything. I'm doing this because this is something I'm excited about, something I'm passionate about, and something I will do for years, even if I don't make money. And I think going into it with that mindset had me execute and produce everything at such a high level of integrity, and not just bring people on because I think they would help me make money or something, or because they had a product I was going to sell or whatever. So I've always had this kind of guide of who I'm going to bring on, the lessons I'm going to teach, the topics, the format, and now I have sponsors because it makes sense, but I only integrate the right sponsors that are aligned to my vision or to what I'm doing in the world, as opposed to, and I turn down a lot of money. You know, I turn down a lot of money that people want to sponsor the show, but it just doesn't, it's not a right fit.
Yeah.
And I don't want to lose my relationship with my audience. I think that's the most valuable thing we have, is our relationship with the people who are listening. So I think you just got to get clear on your vision first. Why do you want to do a podcast? Do you want to do it because everyone else is doing it and you think it'd be cool to have a show and you want to make lots of money? Or do you want to do it because it's part of a bigger mission you have in your life or in your business, and you're committed to a consistent schedule for years and years and years? You got to be very clear.
Yeah. Well, let's just use that word vision. I was just really curious about what your vision was for the podcast when you first started and what your vision is where we are now in end of 2016.
You know, I can't remember specifically what it was when I started it. I remember thinking to myself, I want to, you know, some of the ideas were, I'm having all these great conversations with these people I know, you know, all these influencers. I had great relationships with great athletes, with, you know, best-selling authors, to business leaders, to millionaires, to, I was going to these events and cultivating relationships in multiple industries. And I felt like, man, if people could just hear what I hear in these conversations for dinner, or, you know, in the cab to the hotel, or whatever it is where I'm with these individuals, like the real stuff behind the scenes. Like you guys just said, you know, the interview I did with Ray Lewis, you're like, wow, he really opened up in a big way. Like, you know, we had lunch the week prior where it was just me, him, and his business partner for 3 hours talking about everything about life, where I really got to hear the heart behind the man.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what I want to share with people. So that was the original intention. Like, I want to share what I'm learning with the world, because I feel like if I'm just learning it and I'm not sharing it, I'm doing a disservice to the world. That was number one. The second thing I vividly remember, I just sold a company and I was kind of like in limbo. I just moved to LA. I moved here for a girl that ended up breaking up pretty quickly after, and I was kind of just going through like a low emotional moment for a few months. I was driving through LA traffic, stuck for hours, going trying to get 2 miles away, frustrated that I wasn't living in New York anymore. And I was like, there's got to be a better way to be inspired when people are not in a good place in their life, whether it be driving in traffic or just unhappy. And so I said, I'm going to create some inspiration in the world for people who are stuck in traffic, physically or emotionally stuck in traffic. And that was another thing. And the third thing for me was like reinvention. I wanted to reinvent myself in more of a mainstream branded area. And, you know, writing is not something I enjoy doing every day. I feel like I'm decent at it, but it's just not something I want to get up and write every morning to write a blog post. But I really like having conversations. I like being, you know, doing video and audio. So for me, this was in 2012, before podcasting took off. I just remember talking to a few of my friends who were doing it and kind of like ahead of the game. And I was just like, man, I just feel like this is going to take off. Like with the smartphone capabilities now, with everything that's happening, and with iTunes really pushing podcasting, I was like, this is just going to take off in the next couple of years. Yeah. And it did. So I think I just kind of got lucky in having that vision of like, this is where it's heading. I'm always wanting to be where the puck is going, not where it's at right now. So I always think about 2 years ahead of what's going to be next.
Lewis, have you heard of Dr. Martin Seligman's book, The Character Strengths?
I've heard of it, but I don't know it that well.
So for your audience who knows you as Lewis House, the host of the School of Greatness, and your fans, and then your circle of influence, the people who have dinner with you, who spend, you know, a little bit more intimate space with you, what would those people who know you really well say about your character and you know, that differs you from the next guy?
I think that they would say I care very deeply. And there was a quote that I heard, I think it's from Eleanor Roosevelt, that I heard back in high school when I was really struggling in school, felt kind of, you know, depressed and mentally out of it, and I didn't have any friends because I was just ignorant and wasn't able to comprehend schoolwork, so I was always in the bottom of my class and in special needs classes. I remember reading or hearing a quote that said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I remember thinking, I have a chance. You know, if this is true, then I have a chance, because I always cared deeply. I always was very empathetic and compassionate and affectionate and loving towards people, both men and women. And I just knew that, okay, if I can figure out what that actually means and add value in the world in that way, then I think I'll be okay. So I would think they would say that I truly care and that I don't have an agenda to get anything out of them. Now, obviously, I'm looking to cultivate relationships, and I want to be able to, you know, kind of leverage those relationships in key moments of my life where that makes sense for a win-win. But I'm always forward thinking in, how can I be of service to you? How can I add value to you? How can I promote your book? You know, my podcast is like, how can I sell the maximum books for you or promote the cause you have or whatever it is? And then I never ask for anything in return, ever. Until people ask me, you know, how can I support you? And I say, listen, I'm good right now, but I've got a big book coming out in a couple of years that I, you know, if you find like it's a good fit, cool, would love a post or something, whatever makes sense for you. That's about the extent of my ask. So I think they would say I truly care, that I set them up to win, that I have, I'm really good at seeing their vision, of hearing what they want, seeing all the skills and attributes they have, packaging and positioning them, whether it be with the right strategy, the right ideas, or the right partnerships to help them execute and achieve their dream extremely fast.
We were talking just our most recent interview a couple days ago with a popular Australian celebrity coach, and I asked him a question about, you know, when he was younger, if he ever visualized getting to where he is in terms of fame. And that same day, I'm on your Instagram, and you put up a photo. It's a still shot of you on a stage, and the perspective, the camera angle, is from behind you, so you can see the side, and then you're talking right in an auditorium with a quote. Man, that photo is exactly what the question I asked our guest prior to. Now, my question for you is, did you ever visualize that? Did you ever think that standing on stage, you know, maybe when you were taking those, you said, classes, you know, in high school where you weren't, you know, really believing in yourself, do you ever think it would get to there? And if so, did you see it?
Yeah, you know, early on, I had visions of my future all the time. And originally it was for sports dreams. But then It was about when I was 15, 16, I actually saw Tony Robbins for the first time. My dad bought me a ticket, me and my mom, a ticket in St. Louis, Missouri to see him at this like 3-day kind of like success speaker summit. It wasn't UPW or what he does now, but it was like a, he had like 20 different speakers. Actually, Donald Trump was there. Larry King was like these Super Bowl champion coaches, you know, big athletes, leaders, things like that who were speaking. And then he would share some different content and distinctions on leadership in between and do his thing. But I remember being in this auditorium, 20,000 people at the time, and we had kind of like floor seats, probably halfway back in the middle, probably like if it was 100 rows, we were row 50 or something, right? So not close to the stage, but not all the way in the back. I remember he got off stage one time and started walking down the aisle, and I was sitting kind of like near the edge of the aisles where people could walk through because I'm, you know, 6'4", and I wanted to have kind of some leg room. And he walked through the aisle, and I'll never forget, there was a song playing, Don't Worry, Be Happy. This is how like vivid the moment was. Don't Worry, Be Happy was playing. The whistling part, it was like the whistling of Don't Worry, Be Happy. And he walked through the aisles, and I remember just feeling like, oh, he's going to stop right next to me for some reason. Like, and he walked up and then literally stood right next to me in like this power pose. He didn't even look at me, but he kind of like looked around and started talking. It was maybe for like 15 seconds, but he just stood there. And I remember looking at him in that moment. I was 15 or 16 years old. Looking at him in that moment, I said, one day this is going to be something that I do. I have no clue how I'm going to do it because I am terrified to speak in front of my classmates of five and actually read aloud from a book because I'm the stupidest kid in class. But someday I see myself doing this in front of large audiences, facilitating, speaking, doing whatever it is to support people in achieving their dreams, because that's what I was starving for. I wanted to learn that information, and I just said, I don't know, I feel like this is going to be me one day. And I just had, again, zero clue how, but things kind of started to fall in place where I got the right coaching, I got the right timing, I got the right execution, and here I am, so.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah, is that why you started the business, the summit? Is
You know, I started the summit because, again, I'm always looking to be a few steps ahead and go where I see the puck going. I started the summit. Everyone was telling me, don't do live events. Like, all my friends who had done them in the past, they were like, they're too much. We lose money.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. It's, you know, all this energy and time, and you're burnt out and everything. But then I just like started seeing other people who had successful models, and I would watch them, and I would learn from them, and I'd go to their events, and I'd feel the feelings that I would have, and I'd witness the feelings other people would have from those weekend or week-long experiences, and the community, and the energy, and the passion. And I remember thinking, like, you know, again, you know, people remember feelings. People remember the way they felt around you, or the way that they felt from an experience you created. They don't necessarily remember the things that you said or the things or how smart you were or everything necessarily. Like, you don't remember everything that Tony Robbins says at a 5-day workshop where you're going from 9 a.m. to midnight. You can't remember everything. You remember maybe 3 things, really, that you can implement. But you remember the feeling. You remember the feeling and the community and the impact it has on your emotions and your body. And that, you know, like I'm talking about the feeling I had for 15 seconds when he stood in front of me when I was 16. What is that, 18 years ago? Yeah. I'm still remembering the feeling and the impact. Again, I don't remember what he said. I don't remember anything else from that event, what anyone said. But the feeling. And if we can cultivate that feeling, then and people are going to take action in their life to achieve their dreams, to get clear on their focus, to be better in their relationships, then in my mind, the only way you can really do that at the highest level is a live, curated, facilitated event, an experience, a journey that people go on to discover their inner greatness, to discover what's missing, to discover what's possible for them. Yes, I've got my book where people tell me and email me all the time, like, this transformed my life and gave me clarity and all these great things. Awesome. But you're reading it alone, or you're implementing this alone. Yes, you've got the podcast where I get tons of thank you letters and people say, I lost 100 pounds. I quit smoking. I got out of the abusive relationship because of the podcast. I made seven figures this year because I listened to the podcast and took action every day. And those are great. But again, people are doing that on their own or confined in their business or wherever they're at. The only true way, and again, I do webinars where I'm on with thousands of people and it's me and them, but again, They're all over the world. The only way to really curate that is everyone in the same room, experiencing the same thing, creating some type of an enlightened state, an enlightened experience of community, of opportunity, of possibility. And for me, I said, you know what, it's worth doing this one time to see what it creates. And it was the most beautiful experience probably I've ever done, most beautiful thing I've ever done. Now, we essentially lost $100,000 in the process because it was very expensive, and There was a lot of moving parts, and it took a whole year to produce, and it was a lot of time and energy. But we've already sold more tickets next year than we did all of this year because of the feeling we gave people and because of the experience and the community and the connection. So next year we hope to break even, and I look at it as an investment of, you know, having 1,000 people come and experience something that they'll never experience again, a once-in-a-lifetime experience that will hopefully, they'll remember for the rest of their lives the way I've remembered from that one experience.
Hi guys, I hope you're enjoying that episode with Lewis House. If you haven't yet, remember to subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And please check out our past guests, the likes of Rich Roll, Sean Stevenson, Evander Holyfield, Bedros Koulian, and many more. If you have any questions, please send us an email at info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. But for the meantime, let's get back to the show. And what did it mean, kind of, Lewis, to host it in your hometown, man?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I said, you know, everyone was like, why don't you do it in L.A. or New York or wherever? And they were all kind of like, I'll come if it's in L.A. or New York, but it's just too far to go to Ohio. And I said, you know, and everything I do has a purposeful reason. There's a vision, a purposeful vision behind it, and it's intentional. Yes, I could do it in L.A. and New York and sell out and do all this great stuff and probably make more money right away. But I was like, you know what? Just to kind of give you the backstory of why Columbus, Ohio. One, it's my hometown. I grew up in Delaware, Ohio, so about 30 miles north is where I grew up. But I lived in Columbus for many years. And for me, I wanted to get people out of the coast. So many people go to New York and L.A. for events. And there's too much distraction. There's too much going on, and I don't feel like people are fully immersed in the experience. So and also Columbus, Ohio is the, you know, Ohio, Johnny knows that Ohio is the heart of it all.
It's awesome there, man.
Ohio's the heart of it all. It's the nicest people in the world.
Yeah, I went for the first time this year, man.
I took Tristan with me. We did a U.S. tour, and man, Columbus, every time I go to Columbus, it's constantly evolving.
It's amazing, man. It's blowing up, yeah. So Ohio is the heart of it all, and Columbus, Ohio is in the center of America. If you looked at the map and you look at Ohio, it's essentially where the heart of the body would be if it was a human being. So you've got the heart there. It's you know, it's so much creativity and energy and just good people there that I wanted people to experience kind of a full circle experience for me. When I was sleeping on my sister's couch there, I was a bouncer at a nightclub where we hosted one of the opening parties at. Wow. I was kind of showing them, hey, listen, this is me 7-8 years ago, broken, zero vision, and look what's possible by just committing to your vision and showing up every single day. So it was kind of like a full circle experience for me, but also showing people what's available in their life. And, you know, through building a great team, through having a great support, through taking great action, through having a clear, purposeful vision that's not just only focused on making money, you can make magic happen.
Yeah, the one question we get all the time from the people around us are, how much money do you make off of it? Or, you know, how do you get paid for it? And it's turned into, like, I didn't expect my reaction when you hear that over and over. Because then when you see the people who ask that question, you're instantly able to see their framework. And it's like, you know, we're doing this. It's not about the money. It's about learning and then sharing, you know, even if one person listens, that's all we want. You mentioned greatness and how when I first asked you what it meant to you, how it's something that's cultivated and as you get older and learn, that changes. Do you feel with each person that's the same as potential, or do you feel potential has its ceiling and it's up to the person to get to that?
Say it one more time.
So my question, to simplify it, is the connection between potential and greatness. If greatness is something that we could, you know, work on and cultivate, and it's constantly evolving, is potential something that equally can evolve, or if it's just something that we all have in us, and it's either you reach it or you don't reach it? Because
yeah, I mean, you know, I think we have unlimited potential. You know, potential is really just a possibility of what you can create and what you can achieve or what you can do with the tools you have available to you. So, you know, depending on how willing you are to push your body, your mind, your emotional intelligence, I feel like you can constantly grow. Now, it just may take time. It may take many, many years to get to a certain place depending on how big the dream is. But I feel like we're always able to grow into doing more or creating something different or in any area of our life, if we're willing to do the work mentally and spiritually. I really think it's more than just a thought process of developing powerful ideas and mindset. I think it's got to be some deeper spiritual meaning, not religious meaning, but spiritual connection to why we're here, actually what the universe is, what's the point of it all. I think we've got to be constantly seeking the information to understand why, and why us, why now, why this place. And if we are deepening that understanding of why and what is possible, then I believe we can create whatever we want. Because, you know, 8-10 years ago when I was, you know, playing football and then transitioning out of it, you know, I really had no clue what was possible because I was just kind of focused on myself. I was focused on what I wasn't getting. I was focused on what I didn't have. And as I started to shift out of being obsessed over my self-centric thinking of what was lacking in my life towards, okay, what is possible in this year? And I think sometimes people get caught up in like their whole life, like their vision for their life. Just focus on the next 6 to 12 months. What is possible right now? And start taking daily actions to achieve what you want in the next 6 to 12 months. Yes, you can think ahead. I'm thinking 2 years ahead. I'm thinking 5 years ahead. But I'm taking the actions of what's possible right now in 6 months to see what I can create. And based on that, you'll build momentum and you'll build more belief in yourself in what's possible. And you'll create new opportunities.
You mentioned when you were 16, 17, you had that, your mom sent you that box of you know, memorabilia per se.
Yes.
And you're going through the notes and you said you had stuff from like Robbins and Jim Rohn. Have you ever heard Jim Rohn's little bit about why? About it's right now, there, guys, if you're, you know, to the people listening at home, there's a YouTube channel, The Journey of Purpose, and it has, you know, Les Brown on there. But the Jim Rohn one, why, is all about intent. It's about three minutes. And it got me through a lot. I remember listening to that when I was in my late 20s, over and over. Every morning I'd get up, and it was driving the point home, like, if you're just floating around without an intent, and the intent doesn't have to be something huge. It's like you said, it could be a 6-month goal or 12-month goal.
Mm-hmm.
That could get you to the next day, and then momentum could build.
How
important is momentum, and then also the idea that it's up to us to create it? And
of course, I'm sure you guys have heard of it's to be, it's up to me. So we can't rely on anyone else to create our vision. You know, we can empower others to support us and inspire them and communicate our vision and have a common goal to helping this team of people to support us. And I don't think anything big should be done alone. I really don't think anything should be done alone. I think we should always have a team around us and finding that support system, whether it's a family or a partner or, you know, thousands of employees, whatever it is your vision is. I think the bigger the vision, you need to ensure that your team and your leadership skills continue to evolve so you can empower those around you as opposed to try to do it always yourself, because in my opinion, nothing great can be done alone.
Yeah. Lewis, do you struggle to acknowledge your goals? Like right now, this year, I've kind of smashed through all my goals. And what I've been finding is I'm constantly setting new goals. But then last week, I was trying to look at what I've achieved this year. And I've kind of just kind of gone through it without actually acknowledging it. Do you relate to that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think I do a better job now, although some, you know, in the last 10 years, I would kind of just blow through them as well. And I was like, okay, now it's complete. What's next? And it was always like, it's not good enough. It's not big enough. It's like, let's go next, next, more, more, more.
Yeah.
I think now what I try to do is structure opportunities for that acknowledgement, that kind of celebrative moments, because I think it's really important to acknowledge what you've created. You know, I even said something yesterday to my assistant. I was like, gosh, the year's over. What did I even do this year? You know, I kind of like got to that. I was like, did I even do anything? And she was like, are you kidding me? Like, did you see the event and the book tour and this and this and this? I was like, oh, and like another 150 episodes and blah, blah, blah. You know, I was like, oh, I guess I did something. But I'm just kind of like, I think it's easy to get wrapped up in like, am I doing enough? Am I doing something meaningful enough? Or is it big enough? Or is it, you know, all these things. But I try to structure now, because I could easily get caught up in that, like this kind of negative thinking of like, oh, I'm not doing enough. And what I try to structure is this acknowledgement moments. So every week I do a call with my team where we go over like, what's the big things we achieved in the last week? What are the celebration moments? And what are we focused on for this week in creating? What would make a successful week for us? And sometimes there's bigger things, and sometimes it's kind of like smaller parts of the journey that are leading up to the bigger things. But I also think having, you know, a physical event, you know, having like an annual event, for me, it's like, yes, this was this big celebration moment. It was an acknowledgement of all these great speakers. I got to acknowledge my team. It was like kind of this culminating moment of the year, towards the end of the year. For me, it was like a great grounding moment to be like, man, look at everything we created and look where we're at and have everyone together. So that was cool. But I think you just got to do check-ins with yourself every week, every month, and really acknowledge everything you're creating. And if you're not happy or satisfied, then I guess make bigger goals.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier the summit you just had in September. And could you share some insight on the next one you're planning and how it's going to differ from the first one in this upcoming year?
You know, it's going to be tough. The DJ I had, his name's DJ Iree, he spoke and then he did the closing party for us. And he's like the DJ for Jamie Foxx and the Miami Heat and has like a residency in Vegas. He's like this big DJ. And after the final closing party, I'm in the green room with him and he's like munching on some barbecue wings, right? And we're just kind of like celebrating like it's complete. He goes, Lewis, you screwed yourself because this was too good. He goes, I've never been to an event that was this good, and I can't believe it was your first one. And I go, you know, we've been planning this all year. We've been very thoughtful and detailed about everything to make sure that it was top-notch. You can't call something the summit of greatness and have it be average. So it was very planned out. And he goes, you are effed. You are screwed because everyone now is going to go to other events and be pissed off because no other event has done it the way you've done it. And I don't know how you're going to top this. So I'm already thinking of ways to make it different and unique. And I'm leaving the pressure off of trying to do something extravagant. And again, it's really more the feeling. It's more the emotion. So I've got some incredible celebrity speakers lined up that are just unbelievable world changers that a lot of people know their names. So I've got, you know, different and bigger speakers coming. I've got different experiences. It's going to be a day longer, so it's going to be fun, man.
Could you share with us one of those guests, or is it a secret?
It's a secret for now until I release it. We've already sold half the tickets without even anyone knowing anything about the event.
And pardon my ignorance on your last event, but yep. for the ones listening at home and, you know, for Tristan and I, is there an option for us to, like, maybe book something and stream it live from Australia?
There is no live stream, and the reason why, because everyone wanted that.
Yeah.
The reason why is because you're not going to get the full feeling unless you're there. So you're either in or you're out. there's no, oh, let me just watch and be distracted. Yeah. This is, you've got to be there to experience it. Otherwise, go back to living your life.
Exclusivity. Yeah. I like it, man.
Hey, Lewis, just want to kind of just gain some insights into your everyday life. Are you more structured, or do you have some non-negotiables that you have to go through every day?
I like to have a structure. I think I'm actually more creative and more productive with a structure. And I think that's just kind of from my sports background. Every football practice, we had an itinerary. When we walked into the locker room, I had an itinerary of every 15 minutes what was happening. As opposed to the coaches saying, okay, meet you guys on the field at 3:30 and we'll see what happens. It's preparing yourself before the day to see exactly what you're going to create, so you're mentally, emotionally, and physically ready to take that action on, as opposed to just wandering aimlessly. I also will add in some kind of like free strategic messing around time where I'm, you know, not on, and I just get to kind of like communicate with my team or set up some meetings or kind of just do some emails or whatever I need to do. But I like to have a structure as much as possible. And non-negotiables, you know, I meditate for at least 15 minutes every day. And, you know, I would like to say non-negotiable is working out, but there's some times where I miss it. But it's a high priority for me to work out and meditate and make my bed every morning.
Yeah, are you going to continue to play handball as well?
You know, I just played with the USA team a few months ago down in Argentina for the Pan Am Championships. And I'm the second oldest guy on the team. And I'm going to wait to make that decision next year, because next year we'll find out if LA gets the bid for the Olympics to be the host country.
Yeah.
In 8 years from now. So if they do, then I think I have to, you know, go. That's been my dream as a kid, to play in the Olympics. And that's the reason I'm still playing, is because I want to show myself what's possible. So I think I would probably move to Europe and play for a couple of years with team to really like learn the skills and see it, and give myself the best chance of playing. I need to, if we don't get the Olympics in LA, then I'll probably be done. But if they do, then I'll probably need to, otherwise I'll regret it the rest of my life if I don't at least give it a shot.
Yeah. Cause you went to Brazil this year, didn't you?
I was in Brazil. I was in Argentina. Yeah.
Yeah. What was your fondest memory from the Olympics this year?
Yeah, I mean, I just watched. We didn't qualify. So for me, it was the fondest memory was watching the two countries that did qualify that I just played against the month before and being like, oh, those are my friends, you know.
Yeah.
So it was cool to be like, well, you know, very close to the experience. I've played with guys who are Olympians. You know, I've played against them. And for me, that's kind of cool to be like, you know what, I'm not there yet, but it's very close.
I couldn't bring you on without at least bringing up the Buckeyes, man. My dad went there. My uncle went there. I'm a diehard Ohio State fan. You know, after I moved to Australia, all the other sports kind of just whittled away, except Ohio State football. So, for one, have you reached out to Urban? Has he ever been on your show?
I would love to get Urban. It's funny. His book came out.
Yeah. My family's actually in that book. In the first chapter, Mrs. Stofko, a second grade teacher. That's
wow.
Yeah, so I think I harass him too much. I'm trying to get him on.
That's funny, man. You know, it's funny because his book came out the same week my book came out last year. And the opening week, I hit number 3 in the New York Times bestseller list, and he hit number 4. So for me, it was kind of cool to be like, hey, you know, I beat out the coach of Ohio State Buckeyes on the New York Times list. But I would love to interview Urban. I would actually love to have him speak at my event next year because he's just so inspiring. So, yeah, if you got a connection, let me know.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Actually, I've got a question for both you boys, because you both moved away from Ohio. But what it seems here is that your loyalties to your home state is actually very, very high. While us in Australia, we've never moved away. For example, I've never moved away from Sydney, Australia. But my loyalties to Sydney, Australia doesn't seem as high as you guys are to Ohio. What do you guys think that is?
How would you answer that, Lewis?
You know, I think it's like in the culture, just growing up, there's so much pride for, I think the university is, there's a lot of pride around Ohio State University, which is the biggest school in the country. And they're just so great at so many different things. They're athletics, they win everything, they're just awesome. And there's like this amazing, loving community in Ohio, just this like, everyone says hi. You know, we used to leave our doors unlocked in my house, which is kind of like unheard of in the U.S., but my dad would always leave the doors unlocked. He was just like very safe feeling. I think it's kind of like the culture of like the Midwest values in Ohio. There's just a lot of pride. I don't know. And so for me, growing up, I just always felt very proud to be from that state, for what it represents, for who we are as people, for hardworking as we are, for dedicated and committed as we are. And I've just always been proud.
Yeah, the hardworking, I definitely agree. I grew up about 2.5 hours north in, you know, we definitely couldn't leave our doors unlocked. I grew up in Youngstown. And I think the love of it, perception is a beautiful thing. You know, moments like this, you get to hear two different sides of that fence. I think for my town, there isn't really a lot of opportunity or hope. You know, the economy is really down. You know, they still are struggling to, you know, get out of the whole steel mill declination, like from 40 years ago. And when you have something is, you know, we want to be attached to something and winning and the madness of excellence. And I think Ohio State gives that to a lot of people, you know, good or bad neighborhoods, that sort of thing. People want to be proud of it.
Yeah. All right, Lewis, to wrap things up, you usually finish with the three truths. Now, we finish with the dinner party question. So, Lewis House, you're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. It can be anyone, dead or alive, but it just can't be any family or friends. Who are you inviting, my man?
That's a good question. 5 invites. I think Jesus would be pretty interesting just to hear, because I would want to know if all the stuff actually happened that he did and what it was like.
Well, I think because Jesus being there opens up a lot of other things, like a lot of truths and falses. And that
exactly. So I would just want to be like, is the Bible true or is this just all made up and, you know, just more of a representation of how people you want people to live life or whatever. So I think I would be interesting there. I also think I would want to Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, that's an interesting
one to hear about how he overcame the fear of not falling off the earth and what he was, what his vision was. Like, could he see another land and that the world wasn't flat? Could he visualize that in his mind? And how did he enroll a community of people to come with him on this crazy expedition that was a death sentence from everyone else?
Yeah.
I would say Will Smith.
Yeah, Will.
Because I'm just inspired by him, and I want to have him on my podcast. And I think...
Get him, dude.
I think his career hasn't been based on talent. Yes, he's got some talent, but I think he's actually just such a focused, like, committed person that he's just been doing the work for 25 years that he's developed talent in the process. And so I think it'd be cool to hang out with him. And then the fifth one, I would let you guys choose the fifth one that you think would be the best one for me to learn from.
That's awesome, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
That's the first time we heard that. And lastly, finally, for our fans listening in Australia and the ones living under a rock in America, where could they find you if they want to follow your journey?
LewisHouse.com or the School of Greatness podcast online.
Definitely. Awesome, man.
Lewis, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. So we listen to you every week, so it's great to you come on our show, man. So we really appreciate it, man.
Of course.
Yeah, brother. Thanks a lot, man. You be good.
And hopefully we'll see you at the summit hopefully soon, buddy.
Yeah. Go Buckeyes.
Yes, sir. OH.
Ohio.
Fellow Ohioan leading the way, a dude that I've been wanting to talk to for a long time, Lewis House, man. How do you feel about it?
Man, I just got a lot of positive energy. I've left that interview just feeling, again, inspired. It's been a great week with Commando Steve and with Lewis. Two really good individuals, some great human beings, I think. I think that's where a lot of, you know, the heart of where their success actually lies is the fact that they're really good human beings.
I think that without getting too hippie-ish, which we bring up a lot, I'd like to think that we're all born a good human being, but I feel the thing that separates a guy like Lewis and a guy like Steve, like you aforementioned, is the work and the awareness that they both collectively have put in to continually develop their skills and their craft, especially when they want to affect people on the masses for a positive influence.
Yeah, definitely. They put the hard yards in, and it's not just about a God-given gift or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's more than that. Do you know what I mean? The work ethic, the way they care for people, you know, that's what separates them from the rest, you know.
$100,000 in debt to do an event and a summit to feel the energy of the people. So what Lewis kept saying and referencing reminds me of a very famous Maya Angelou quote that I've quoted on here a couple times. My childhood best friend, Matthew Banks, shout out. His mother, Dee, Virginia Banks, another shout out, grew up and was good friends with Oprah and Maya Angelou. And I met Maya once during a Thanksgiving in 1996 in Youngstown, Ohio. And the quote was, people won't always remember what you tell them. They'll always remember how you made them feel.
Yeah, of course.
It's that.
And it's free. You got a choice.
Free is an interesting word.
Like, people think that you need to be paid to do something properly, but you don't. You know, what she said is brilliant. Like,
paid to make people feel good? What do you
think? No, what I mean by that is, like, it's something that you've got control over. Do you know what I mean? You know, you don't have to pay $100 to do it. You know, you've got full control over the way you treat people and your own effort that you bring every day. Do you know what I mean? For those that have lost a job, you know, it's a bad situation to be in, but you've got two choices. You can either stay in bed and let it sink in and keep you down, or you can do something about it. Do you know what I mean? Be nice to people. Go out there and see what's out there.
Compliment people.
Work on a skill. Maybe go, you know, do something different.
Say I'm sorry.
Yeah, man.
Say thank you. I love the chat between something I'm really interested in lately is the word potential. And there was a time not too long ago in my life where I just knew I wasn't living up to it. I knew that I wanted more. And what held me back was a plan of attack. It was that story I talked to you about last year in November before we had this show, and I went to see Rogan perform for UFC 200 or 202, Ronda in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And my buddy opened for him, and he was killing it on stage. And that's when it hit me, and I got back to Sydney, and I was like, man, I'm not living up to my potential. I know there's something that I need to do. I know I have skills, and I know I have flaws. But let's focus on my skills. So what am I good at? And one of the things was speaking, and coming up with ideas. And from there, I think if you could identify and be honest with yourself 100%, identify what you're good at and simplify it, I think that's the path that will put you on to reaching that potential.
Yeah.
And it's like Lewis said, it won't happen this big. I used to think it had to happen like a bomb, like this big cloud of smoke at one time. But it's more like a step-by-step momentum occurring sequence.
Yeah, that's because you're taking action. We spoke to Steve about that as well the other day, about action-taking instead of just letting it sit down.
Instead of dreaming.
Yeah, instead of just planning and dreaming, just take some steps. You know, I think people look at that end goal too quickly instead of breaking it down into smaller paths and attacking it step-by-step and really just achieving. And, you know, I'm glad I got to ask Lewis that question about kind of embracing, you know, the goals that you did, because I thought I might have heard him say that. I was following him for so long that you kind of forget sometimes what they've said 3 years ago. But I just want to double check with him, like, about, because I was feeling a little bit down in that area in terms of, like, man, we've achieved quite a bit this 12 months, you know. We've come a long way for what this was this time last year. So I'm really proud of what we've done, but I don't think I've kind of acknowledged it properly. So that's what I've kind of tried to do over the last couple of days, acknowledge the fact that we have done pretty well over the last 12 months.
I think the number one driving force of that is, though, our relationship and trust in each other. So the importance of that, it's not like hearing our episodes and our interviews with people, it's not like we press a button and magically everything happens. It's those times where, like, you have to hold me accountable with my work ethic, and we have to have chats about what we want to achieve and how many weekends in a row of us not going out and believing in our mission and wanting to help people and waking up at 2 a.m. and just knowing that there is a reason for what we're doing. And something I wanted to ask you that I didn't get a chance to ask you, it reminded me of a question I asked Lewis and I asked Steve. You know, when Lewis, that Instagram post I asked Lewis about, he's standing on that stage. It's an awesome post. It's about a week ago, and he's talking in front of a packed room. It's exactly the vision that Steve told us about he had as a kid. When you were younger, did you ever have any moments other than, you know, that you kind of maybe, you know, some people would say it's like the multiverse.
Yeah.
You know, like...
To be honest, I never really had any vision in terms of standing in front of the crowd.
Not standing in front of the crowd. I'll use that as an example. But did you ever have any vision that you would be helping people on a mass scale?
Probably not to the extent of helping people on a mass scale. I've always thought that I could use my... Because I've never been scared to speak in front of people. That's never... I've had kind of the reverse to... Most people are scared of public speaking.
But it's not the action of speaking. It's the vulnerability of opening up and allowing people into your mental framework that you're doing.
So I always had a feeling that I would use my ability to speak in front of people for something good. I just didn't know to what extent that I could probably do it. So in terms of like those two having visionaries and speaking in front of people, no, I didn't have that at all.
You use any techniques on a daily basis to see where you want to go in the next few years?
In terms of daily techniques, I like writing things down. And I feel that when I do write things down, sometimes I've got to achieve them, if that makes sense. So, for example, if I said I want to do 250 episodes with Johnny, I'm going to do that. Do you know what I mean?
I mean,
like, that's an accountable thing.
Yep.
Like, and just what I've been doing lately is just writing the people that I feel that I would like to talk to, and I feel that the audience would get something out of.
Mm.
So I've got a list of about 50 people, and I've been slowly ticking it off and just getting in contact with them. You know, some say yes, some say no, but that's the way life is. You know, sometimes I even like it when they say no, because it inspires me to get back on the wagon and just get back out there and ask three more people to just come in. So
it's one of my favorite parts of what we do is the action of getting a hold of them, you know, setting it up sort of thing, getting a date, and then, you know, doing the – by the time we interview these guys – we've already done, a couple hours of research. We know who they are. We have already set the, so probably at least 5 hours of work before the actual interview happens.
Yeah.
And so guys listening at home who maybe, you know, need some advice on, the reason why I asked the question initially were like techniques and what works for you. So what works for Tristan, writing things down. And at the end of the day, that's an accountability tracker.
What are you feeling on your side though?
So what I do is like, The speaking in front of people, like actually there, how Lewis said, that's what I want to do, and I visualize it. So what I do to visualize it is, at work, I spend most of my time at the health club, and at the health club there's sliding doors, and I to go in and out, and I've seen these sliding doors now everywhere. They're in almost every shop I go into. So what I do is every time I walk through the doors, one of the receptionists just asked me about it the other day. As the doors slide open, I put my arms up and I'm practicing greeting an audience of 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And I visualize the green curtains opening up. They're dark green and the wood is hardwood and it's like a brown stained color, and then the seats are maroon and the place is packed multi-levels. And I'm, you know, practicing my, because I could see it and that's what I want. I visualize it. And the intent is to hone my skill set, hone the craft, learn as much as we can from you, from the people we interview, from mistakes, from accomplishments, and then find a way to bottle that up and then deliver that in a sense of people who, you know, want to help people.
Yeah, I think no goal's too small, do you know what I mean? Like, or too big, do you know what I mean? Because the world's just we don't even know
how opportunity.
We don't even know how the world started.
Like, we don't even know why we're here, though.
Exactly.
Like, we could go down that road if we wanted
to. That's what I mean. I've got no qualms in telling anyone
what to do.
What to do.
Or what not to do. Just do something.
Do it.
Yeah.
Give a shit.
Opportunity, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at it. Simplifying our headspaces. Every day is an opportunity. And I think that's where the super, super important part of you need to identify your intent. Like, waking up each day and understanding what are you here to do.
Yeah,
it's super important.
I think the major thing is, like, we just don't know why we're here. So if you've got an idea, instead of thinking about it, take action and go for it. There's no loss doing it. So, do you know what I mean?
I think everyone's here to help people.
Go for it.
I think that as a human species, we want to help people. It's in our spirit to be kind and community and share things. And if you could compartmentalize and simplify life to just that, there's something that you have in your skill set that you could use and apply and develop a strategy and create something to help people.
Yeah, I agree.
If that's making coffee for someone at 6 a.m., you're helping people. If that's doing massages, if that's doing acupuncture, if that's coaching, if that's teaching, if that's driving a bus.
Something simple. It could be stopping by and saying hello to the the homeless guy that you walk past every day, just have a conversation, or every Friday give him a couple bucks so he can have a coffee or something to eat.
Yeah, know? Man, it's Jimmy. Simple. Shout out to Jimmy on the corner, yeah. Man. George Street and I think it's Jameson. Haven't seen him in a couple weeks, but
This morning.
Did you see him?
Yeah, sorry.
You know what, guys? If you listened to the Pollock one episode a while back, he talked about giving 10% away. So after that episode, I made a promise to myself that I was going to pick one guy I see on the streets every day in Sydney and start giving him stuff.
Yeah,
and that's
Jimmy.
Jimmy is a cool dude, man. And now I'm working on what can I give him that's not money.
Yeah,
how can I give him something that he could use better?
Yeah,
but that's important.
You know, it's all about. He does bring a little bit of gratitude for me. Do you know what I mean? Every time I see him, say hello.
Tall bloke, just, man. It's like 6'5".
Yeah, you got to be grateful for what you got. Not everyone's got a roof over their head or a fridge where you can grab food and have a glass of water. You know,
I hope there comes a day where I don't see him. And it's for a good thing.
And I hope he bounces back and he does what he wants to do. We don't know what his goals are in life. So hopefully maybe he'll tell us one day.
Or how he got there.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should ask him.
I think it'll be good.
Interesting. Bring Jimmy on.
That's interesting. Maybe a future guest.
I know, for sure.
In talking about future guests, we've got Diamond Dallas Page on next. Should be a great interview. If you don't know him, he's a WWE superstar. I grew up idolizing the guy, so that should be very, very interesting.
Yeah, he was a WCW world champion, and now what he's doing with a lot of his time is helping people recover by doing yoga. Yeah. DDP yoga.
DDP yoga. Next, we've got Stephanie Rice, 3-time Olympic gold medalist, 5-time world record breaker. She's doing some great things in business and in fitness.
It'll be a first for the Vision Board having a gold, multi-gold medal winner, would you say? Yeah. Multi-gold winner on.
Yeah, she win? December period, people taking it off. The Vision Board podcast is bringing it on. So next Saturday, we're going to do a triple header. We've got Steve Maxwell, who's one of the really highly regarded people in strength and conditioning.
He's a little legend.
Bit different too, isn't he? He's got a bit of a different philosophy.
For sure. He lives out of his backpack. He's a minimalist. Have you seen the backpack?
No, not yet.
Google it.
But I'm going to do a bit of research over the weekend. We've got Tim Sykes, who's got an interesting story. Finance guy. He's got a really interesting story. I think he went from 12, I think he had a bar mitzvah fund of 10 or 12 grand, and he brought it into $1 million. So he runs a hedge fund now.
That's awesome.
So he's a bit of a finance guy.
We get to learn. I love that. You know what? Back in the day, I wouldn't say I like, those are my favorite now.
Yeah.
The Sam Ovens of the world, and like learning business strategy and stories about how to like.
Tim.
Yeah.
He's very out there, big social guy. I think he's a bit of a socialist. Is that the word?
Or no, socialist, political. He'd be a socialite.
Socialite.
Yes.
I think he is. He's very much in those sort of.
Would he be like the Wolf of Wall Street?
Nah, okay. Not that big, man.
Okay.
The Wolf is the Wolf.
Jordan.
Yeah, exactly.
Shout out.
And then we've got Jake Ducey. Is that
Jake Ducey, Young Buck, man, doing good things for humanity, writing books, public speaking in his early to mid-20s, surrounding himself around the right people, and his mission is to spread the word of kindness and spread the word of, you know, it's okay to help people.
Yeah, well, I don't know a huge amount about Jake, so I kind of like that when it's like an open sort of billboard, and I can kind of do a bit more research and just check out what Jake's about, but I'm sure he'll be a great guest. So that's our guest. So if you want to ask any questions, you've got about, before we record, probably 4 or 5 days. So send us a quick email at info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Also, please subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, and please leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah, hit the nail on the head, guys. Support the cause. Support the movement. I give love to everyone who supported this cause, man. We got nothing but love for you, friends, family, and listeners.
Really appreciate it, guys. Just remember, on it, get your 10% off with code board Vision Board and the ebook on our homepage, and also /ebook at the Vision Board Podcast website, The Abs, Little Secrets of Myself and Johnny.
Yeah, buddy, man. Get involved. Support it.
Great episode, my man. Really appreciated sharing that one with you.
It was awesome, man. I always love what you do, man. Thank you as well.
What do you say? Ohio?
So we go O-H.
O-H? Ohio.
No. So
I'm getting it. Sorry.
Yeah, so you'll be, no matter where you're in the world, Ohio State University, I think, has the second largest university in the States, over 70,000 students. So the alumni is the largest. So you could be in like Tokyo, or you could be in Sydney and see somebody wear a Buckeye shirt, and I would go O-H, and the person on the other side would hear that, and they would go I-O.
Ah, good
yeah, job. So it's O-H.
I-O.
There you go, player. Go Buckeyes, playing
you're in
Clemson.
The semis, right?
Yeah, Final Four playing Clemson, have to revenge a loss from a few years ago.
2-3?
Yeah, 2-3.
And then who's 1-4?
Bama is playing Washington.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So where's the semifinal at?
I don't know.
Is that a home and away series?
No, they're going to be on a neutral site. Okay. Probably somewhere in Texas or Southern California.
So it's anyone's ball game, really.
It's anyone's ball game. But the Buckeyes travel well. Like every time Ohio State goes down to like Glendale, Arizona for like the Fiesta Bowl, out of like 90,000 fans, you'll see like 70,000 in Scarlet and Gray.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
And then the final's usually at Louisiana, right?
The Superdome? Well, it goes back. Sometimes it's in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. Sometimes they do it at Glendale at the Fiesta Bowl. Sometimes they do it in New Orleans. I think it's a rotating city type of thing.
Man, I've been to this because I go for New Orleans Saints.
Okay.
I've been to the Superdome. Superdome is beautiful.
Yeah, man.
That's a great stadium. Anyway, good luck, Ohio. O-H.
I-O.
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks,
Johnny. Hope on, guys. Yes, sir.
See you, guys.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.